The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the main branch of the Free Library of Philadelphia for the Great Poe Debate. And yes, absolutely. So the first thing I'd like to ask, if you have a cell phone or a pager of some kind, and just please turn that off during our proceedings here. And if you'd like to take photographs, now most of the time at venues like this, they always tell you not to. We encourage you to take photographs. We don't really want to forget this, okay? Especially at the end when the winner is announced. There you go. Okay. Well, first of all, my name is Grover Silcox. I've, like many people, not only in Philadelphia, but Boston and Baltimore and other cities, have been a big fan of Edgar Allan Poe for a long time. Often we first are introduced to Mr. Poe in junior high. And that's where I came across him first, for real. And I'll never forget, I had a nun named Sister Rosemary, which was scary because I didn't go to Catholic school. So right away, things were a little off. But Sister Rosemary, she was frightening doing math. So you can imagine what she was like doing Poe. She was, but she used to recite The Raven. And she used to really get into it. And it was interesting because she was all in black, and she kind of looked like a raven. And so she had a lot in common with Poe. Poe was 5'8". She was 5'8". She had a habit. Poe had a little mustache. Well, okay, hers wasn't all that little. Anyway, we still have folks coming down here. Very good. But I know the kids. I later became a substitute teacher in Philadelphia. And when do we have any teachers here tonight? Great. Great. And so I picked up some cues from Sister Rosemary and decided to, instead of following the lesson plan, which, to be honest, seemed rather senseless, I said, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Poe. And so, I would do the telltale heart for them, and they would sit on the side, you know, holding the sides of their chairs, and they were really into it. And it's amazing when you really impact a child, they'll really pay attention. They'll put their firearms down, and they'll really give you a listen. And so many of us can thank Edgar Allan Poe for many things, myself included. And so now, without any further ado, I'd like to again welcome everyone here tonight. We appreciate you coming, and we're thrilled that you are, to the latest battle in the Poe War, an all-out, knock-down, drag-out fight as to which city best represents the legacy of Edgar Allan Poe. Now, Poe lived in many places during his life: Richmond, England, New York, Boston, Baltimore, and Philadelphia. We all know he died in Baltimore and is buried there. But should his bones rest elsewhere? Would the legacy of America's greatest writer be best served if his remains were reinterred in another city? Should Baltimore keep Poe? Should Boston have Poe? Should Philadelphia have Poe? To It's good to see we have an unbiased crowd tonight. So welcome to the first Great Poe Debate. Three men will enter, only one will emerge victorious. Before we begin, I'd like to bring out a special guest. He's one of the most influential writers America has ever produced. He was the greatest literary critic of his age. He invented the mystery-slash-detective genre. He invented the science fiction genre. He invented the psychological horror genre. The man whose bicentennial we celebrate this week, the master of the macabre. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Mr. Edgar A. Poe. That's a looking rather good for 200 years old. A hearty handshake as well. So Edgar will be with us tonight to help the festivities and help our debate along in any way that he can. So another round of applause for our guest tonight. Now, the Great Poe Debate will proceed like most political debates you've seen. Each city representative will make an opening statement, and then I'll ask one of them a question. He'll answer, and then each of the other two will have a chance for rebuttal. I'll ring this bell. For at least two of them. When their time is up. At the end of the debate, the crowd will have the opportunity to applaud for the representative that they think should win the debate. You pick the winner, and Edgar A. Poe himself will present the winner with this handsome trophy of himself. It's a good likeness. Now, let me introduce the contestants. Ladies and gentlemen, first up, a professor of English at Boston College is the author of two books, Cracking Up and Comic Effects, and of articles on Gothic fiction, dark humor, and U.S. literature and culture from 1790 to 1860. His interest in connections between humor and fear has drawn him to the work of Boston native Edgar Allan Poe. So without any further ado, please welcome Paul Lewis. Thank you, Paul. And I think I was actually supposed to bring on Paul last, wasn't I? But you improvised very well. So I think we shall bring on our friend from just south of us. Curator of the Edgar Allan Poe House and Museum in Baltimore since 1978. Jeff Jerome has been promoting the life and times of Edgar Allan Poe since 1976. He is frequently quoted and misquoted by the media. His goal at the Poe House and Museum is to attack and destroy the many myths and legends that have been circulating about Poe since his death in 1849. Jeff Jerome accepted this challenge because he's annoyed that people are suddenly coming out of nowhere claiming Poe as their own, and once and for all, bury Ed Pettit and his pretentious claim to Poe's legacy and bones. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeff Jerome. Very nice. Jeff, I got that same sweatshirt at the Maryland House on I-95. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce, hailing from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, he's a writer, a book critic, a blogger, a professor, a literary provocateur. He's a member of the MBCC and the MWA. He wants Poe, and he's not afraid to tell you about it. Please welcome your own Philly Poe guy, Ed Pettit. You know, in the spirit of fairness, it took me everything I had to hold back from applauding for you. All right. Are we ready to begin, gentlemen?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
All right. Let's start with an opening statement. We'll have opening statements, and I think we're going to start. We're going to have an opening statement, and they're approximately 4 minutes each. Again, if you go over the 4 minutes, we have the old Liberty Bell here. Okay?
How's that sound?
There you go. That's it. Boy, I feel good. Okay. And I think this is where we start with Paul. Would you like to...
What order are we doing?
Would you like to have a coin toss for the opening statement?
Yep.
We're going to go, okay.
We're going with me.
Yep. All right, ladies and gentlemen, for his first opening statement, Paul Lewis.
Thank you very much, and thanks for the invitation to participate in this event. I realize in a way that in some ways I'm in a situation rather like that of Daniel Webster, an earlier Boston orator, who was compelled, as you recall, to argue his case against the devil himself.
Thank you.
In front of an audience of the damned. And I am in some ways kind of the underdog here, and we know how badly underdogs do in American society and culture. So I'm going to struggle against that. As my postcard, I hope you've all seen it about Poe in Boston, suggests, as the underdog, I'm aware that some of you might suspect that I would be fabricating evidence. And so I was very reluctant to bring some of the materials that I have brought on that card. But we're very excited because our ongoing archaeological Edgar Allan Poe dig in South Boston has finally, after 8 months, produced amazing material culture items. One, the earliest portrait ever done of Edgar Allan Poe. You see it here. It's amazing how much of his adult face made it into his first few weeks of life. But I would remind you in all seriousness that we are celebrating this month, next Monday, and for the entire year, one event, the birth of Edgar Allan Poe. We aren't celebrating when he wrote any particular story, whatever it may have been. We're celebrating his birth. So in a way, the debate should be over, and I'm ready to go. No. I have more to say. But I just want to point that out. Yeah, sorry, guys. Just wait your turn.
We were so close.
That's 4 minutes? No.
No, I just felt like trying.
All right. Well, I'm going to cut right to it. I'm going to cut right to it here. The second item, as you can see on my card, is a journal. Now, this journal was only unearthed 2 days ago, so it was written entirely in Edgar Allan Poe's own code, but you can see he used the name Edgar A. Perry that he enlisted in the Army. On the way over here, friends were kind enough to drive me to the event, I was able to translate, break the code for the opening paragraph, Poe's first writings on his first morning waking up in Boston at the age of 18 in the spring of 1827. And bear with me, this is a rough translation. The car was shaking. It wasn't that well lit. But here, it sounds something like this. Once upon an April morning, it was bleary. Maybe it was weary. I was dreary. Anyway, I woke up at the rundown Usher House Inn, which needs new paint and plaster. Large fissure was opening in the external wall. The co-owner, Raj.
Is there a hook or something?
Yeah, just hang on. He says it's on the upswing. I think it was kind of the pits. On the way out after breakfast, I had, by the way, jam of two kinds with my toast. I tripped over a dead bird, some really kind of crow, maybe, I guess. I was in too much pain to notice. I chipped a tooth on the brick walkway. I looked up. I saw another occupant, a guy named Bill Wilson. No, I had a former student. Bill Wilson. He was there out of one side of his face. I could see a sympathetic grin out of the other, a kind of hostile and sadistic glare. I asked the chambermaid Bernice for advice about what to do. She sent me to her dentist on Montresor Street. All right. I don't want to put too much emphasis on this. It's only been out of the ground for 2 days. But I will say this. I mean to say a good deal about the debate that my two opponents have been having since kindergarten about Baltimore, Philadelphia, Poe. The reason they can't resolve the debate, as I will make clear later on, is that they are asking the wrong questions, and so they can't get to a satisfactory answer. I have brought the right question. I will produce a satisfactory answer, and we will later rest the so-called great Poe debate once and for all. Thank you.
Very nice. You know, I don't know how it happened, Paul, but when you were speaking, the Poe statue turned in the other direction. I don't know. I'm sure it has nothing to do with...
It's good to have an objective moderator, Grover. I appreciate that.
My pleasure. It's the least I can do.
Yeah, so I see.
Believe me.
Yeah.
All right. And now, Jeff Jerome, opening statement.
Well, first of all, I will not sit here and make fun of Poe. I'm sorry, you know, that this is serious. And, you know, actually, after listening to him, I think it's over with. I mean, wow, how can we compete with this guy? I thought I was listening to a lecture at a college, man. Well, I'm pleased to be here in Philadelphia. This isn't my first visit, and I have many friends here, and I hope I have some friends after I win this tonight. But let me first say that Edgar Allan Poe's family is a very old Baltimore family. His grandfather served in the Revolutionary War, War of 1812, and as a matter of fact, his grandmother made trousers for Lafayette's troops when he was encamped in Baltimore. It was in Baltimore that Poe wrote his first true horror story, Berenice. This was a gruesome story of premature burial, grave desecration, and mutilation. It was a fun story. I love that story. Well, he got into some trouble. He wrote an apology. He said that he was doing nothing more than giving the public, you people, what they wanted, and that was the sensational, the bizarre. But he promised never to do it again. Well, I'm glad he broke his promise, but I keep thinking if he did keep his promise, maybe he would have become a teacher or a bricklayer. And these are all jobs that he applied for in Baltimore, and we wouldn't be sitting here today. And this Ed next to me probably wouldn't be harping about, he wrote this here, he wrote that there. So I think... it was also in Baltimore that he won his first literary prize for best short story, manuscript found in a bottle. And he would have won the best... short poem prize, but apparently one of the contestants was the editor of the newspaper who entered the contest under an assumed name. So when Poe died in Baltimore in 1849, he was buried in his grandfather's plot. And I will concede right now, to save all the hoopla about this, that Nielsen Poe, Poe's cousin, really wanted to get him in the ground as quickly as possible. They did not get along, and I know Ed next to me.
Philly Poe guy.
What? I'm just getting... Are you serious?
Well, he's the boss.
No. Go ahead. If you must, go ahead.
I'll make it.
Okay.
Longer. Please wrap it up.
In 1875, when they moved Poe's body to a different location in Baltimore, from that moment till now, the city of Baltimore has been honoring Edgar Allan Poe. Where were these other cities during this time? Where was Philadelphia honoring Poe? It wasn't. Where was Boston, New York, Richmond? Nobody but Baltimore stepped up to the plate and to this day has been honoring Edgar Allan Poe. Okay, ring your bell. Is that one correct, too?
Yeah, there you go.
Nicely done. Jeff will be back next year when we compete for the legacy of Poe's grandfather.
We won't want Edgar to be lonely.
That's right. And now, final opening statement from Ed Pettit. Ed.
Friends, Philadelphians, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come not to bury Poe, but to unbury him. The words that he wrote live after him. Authors' legacies are not interred with their bones. So let it be with Poe. Baltimore hath told you that Poe is theirs. If it were so, it were a grievous fault. And grievous they shall be when I answer them. For Poe is a Philadelphian, and his legacy belongs to the Quaker City. I like that little Shakespeare mix there. So. Ladies and gentlemen, for some time now, the city of Baltimore has been telling the world that Edgar Allan Poe and their city are inextricably linked, that Poe and Baltimore go together like crab and cake. The facts are these. Poe had some family connections in Baltimore. Poe lived there briefly at the start of his writing career. Poe died there. Unfortunately died there. Unfortunate because when he did, they didn't care. As he lay in the ground, they didn't even mark his grave. Then years later, Poe becomes famous. And Baltimore says, hey, isn't that famous guy buried in one of our cemeteries? And so they created for the world the Baltimorean Poe. But remember this. Poe was not living in Baltimore when he died. He was just passing through. And where was he heading on that fateful trip? To Philadelphia. To the city where he had lived for the crucial core years of his writing career. To the city where he wrote almost all of his greatest works. We remember a writer for the works they created. And when the place they wrote those works had an enormous influence on their life and works, we should remember that too. Philadelphia was the crucible for Poe's imaginative genius. While here, he wrote the stories we still read. Fall of the House of Usher, Black Cat, Pit and the Pendulum, Mask of Red Death, William Wilson, Goldbug. Should I go on? I will. Telltale Heart, Murders in the Rue Morgue. Poe invents the mystery detective story while living and writing in Philadelphia. He began writing his masterpiece poem, The Raven, while living in Philadelphia. I'll say it again. Philadelphia was the crucible for Poe's imagination. The 6 years he spent living here were the most productive and most successful of his writing career. Poe became a great writer while living in Philadelphia. Even when he began his writing career in Baltimore, his works were being published in Philadelphia magazines. The first four tales Poe ever published, Philadelphians were the first public readers of those tales. And Boston? Please. Poe was born there only because that was the city his pregnant actress mother happened to be performing when she went into labor. When Poe grew up, he did wish to be part of Boston's literary culture. His first book of poems is even signed by a Bostonian. But just as Baltimore didn't give a fig for Poe immediately after he died, Boston wanted no parts of Poe while he was alive. Poe was rejected by the high and mighty Boston literary Brahmin from the very beginning, and their shoddy record of honoring him for the past century and a half, by which I mean not honoring him, speaks to their opinion of him. Boston doesn't want Poe, they never have. So, Philadelphians, on the 200th anniversary of Poe's birth, let's welcome home Poe's legacy. I'd love to exhume his body and his wife and mother-in-law, too. They're buried next to him. We'll bring them all up. We'll bring them up to the city of brotherly love. But really, we all know the body will never really be moved. So let's claim his legacy. When people hear or read the name of Edgar Allan Poe, they should think, Poe, a Philadelphia writer. I know we have Ben Franklin. And we have Rocky, too, and I love them both. But Poe is the greatest, most influential writer America ever produced, and he's a Philadelphian. Not by birth, not by family connections, but by his creative genius. Edgar Allan Poe is a Philadelphian because it was in this city that he became the greatest and most influential writer America ever produced. Far more than any other place Poe lived, Philly helped shape the works of Edgar Allan Poe. Poe is a Philadelphian. Should we just call it a night now?
And far be it from me to, you know, show any bias, but in that long list of short stories that Poe wrote in Philadelphia, shouldn't William Wilson be counted twice?
William Wilson. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
It's a nice William Wilson joke for any of
you. Yeah, it's for you.
It's doppelganger.
Efficient, real aficionados. Okay. We are going now to ask some questions. And each question will require a 3 to 5 minute answer. And the other participants will have 2 minutes for rebuttal. So first let me ask... Let me ask Jeff.
Yes.
All right. Let's make this simple. Baltimore. Why?
Weren't you paying attention?
I mean, didn't he die there just passing through?
Well, if he had died in Philadelphia, he would just be passing through. And he was not coming to Philadelphia. He was going back to New York. Minor point that you...
But he was on his way to... He was stopping in Philly. He's left his mother-in-law instructions to have a letter left for him in the office. Would he not be stopping in Philly if he didn't want a letter left for him in the office? And he was contracted to edit someone's volume of verse in Philadelphia. He may have very well edited that new volume, his new journal in Philadelphia.
Before I go any further, can I move this?
Yeah, it's kind of threatening, isn't
it? Yes, Well, like I said, it was in Baltimore that he first gained literary recognition, and it was in Baltimore that he recognized the Arab interest in the bizarre and the strange, and it was in Baltimore that he met and fell in love with his cousin Virginia, and what, did I say something funny? No?
You know, Jeff, there was so much inbreeding in the Poe family,
now,
she really should have been in West Virginia.
I knew somebody would bring that up, and I would like to remind you that in that time period, it wasn't unusual for a young lady of 13, 14, or 15 to get married to someone in their 20s or 30s because of the mortality rate. Now, I know some of you are thinking, well, okay, we can deal with that. But they were cousins, for God's sake. Call the cops, right? Well, it is legal in the state of Maryland, and I believe in Pennsylvania and 22 other states, for cousins to get married. So before you get on your high horse and say, oh, my God, that's disgusting, remember that it was legal in that time period. And I'm not saying that's the way to go. I'm just telling you that it was legal. And actually, people weren't upset when they got married about the age difference. They were upset because they were both poor. Usually when cousins got married, it was to keep the money in the right family, the right religion, and right social class. They were both poor. So people thought, why did they get married? They loved each other, okay? Yeah, I know, it's touching. I know.
Very nice. Paul, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yes, I do. Thanks. It was great listening to Ed for about 25 minutes. No, come on.
I'm trying to help you out, Jeff.
Okay, I'm just going to tick off a few points because there's a lot of things being said here that are not quite true. Old Baltimore family, the paternal line. Let's talk about Edgar Allan Poe's dad, shall we, who abandoned Poe and his two young siblings.
We don't know if
and
was
a
abandoned.
Starving. I'm sorry, Jeff. And his virtually starving wife. I don't think both. You see, it's like all for these guys, it's all about, well, Poe lived here. Well, Poe worked here. They don't want to talk about the quality of his life in these cities at this time. Every city Poe lived in, whether it was Richmond, New York, Baltimore, or Philadelphia, every single city inspired his work by torturing him. They tortured him by not paying him a decent wage. Edgar Allan Poe went to bed hungry some nights when he was at the height of his career here and in Baltimore and in New York. They didn't know where they were coming from, their next meal was coming from. So don't be moved by all of the representatives of these cities which say, oh, we love Poe, we supported Poe. The hell they did, you know? They should, before they claim his legacy, they should get down on their knees and beg his forgiveness. When they recognized his genius, when they saw what he could do, they thought, here's a sub-editor. We could work him about 80 hours a week, and we could pay him starvation wages. We could pay him less than the contributors who are contributing who aren't here. So the only city with a legitimate claim to Poe's legacy is the city that he didn't live in much of the time when he was a professional writer. And let me just make another point before they jump all over that. What is it about Boston? Edgar Allan Poe, what we honor about him is who he was as a writer. I agree with Ed about that, and who he was as a literary critic. Every important value, enduring value that Poe espoused and believed in and made him unique was shaped by his opposition to New England writers. And that struggle which he had, Poe had big quarrels with Boston. And in the middle of his long-running quarrel, he had a hell of a pissy fit and a fight with Boston. So it was all about opposition. But guess what? Culture becomes strong. We become a national literary culture by way of these fights. So when Poe fought New England transcendentalism, when he mocked Emerson and Emerson mocked him, that's how we became American literature. That's how we developed as a national cultural identity. And that struggle makes Poe's affiliation with Boston, even though it was on the snarky side, the most important city. I mean, the truth is really, no city can claim Poe. He's a figure of world literature. And he's celebrated around the world. And he needs no praise from us. But these cities should be ashamed of how they treated him. And they should get down on their knees and beg his forgiveness before they take one crumb of his legacy.
I have to be honest, Paul, that was so good, I almost bought it.
Oh, come on, come on.
Can I rebut as well?
Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, give it your best.
I mean, come on, talk about begging, talk about Philly and Baltimore begging for Poe's forgiveness. I mean,
yeah.
Boston at every turn of the game in Poe's writing career turned away from him. He wanted to be part of their culture, and they all said no and reviewed him badly and made fun of him and all that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, Boston, and Boston may have been the one city out of these that Poe really did. Well, maybe, well, yeah, Boston's probably the one city out of these three that Poe actually wanted to go and settle down and remain and have a successful career. And they wanted no parts of him, the transcendentalists. So Poe had to, you know, battle these guys in the press, like Longfellow and people, and call them plagiarists. But I just wanted to comment on Jeff, on what Jeff had said earlier too, and can I just say that Poe's marriage to his 13-year-old cousin will be no part of my argument that he belongs in Philadelphia. I just wanted to make sure you know that ahead of time. That's not where I'm going to argue he should be part of here. So, And Beau had a very successful marriage, actually, and they were very devoted to each other. And while they were living in Philadelphia, and accounts from their friends said they were very happy here. And while Poe was in dire poverty almost his entire career, the only place where he has a brief period of not being in poverty is in Philadelphia, working for Graham's Magazine, where he made some like $800 a year or something. You know, and it was enough for them to live on finally. He finally found a market where he could sustain himself and his family briefly.
Yeah, briefly. It's very good. I think we can move on now. Let me see. Well, Paul.
Yes, Grover.
Philly has a house and a museum that Poe lived in. Baltimore has a Poe house and museum. Boston has a plaque. Do you feel a little outgunned, Paul? But it's a nice plaque.
No, it's not really too nice. It's very small. And is there a question in all that, Grover?
Yes. Do you feel a little outgunned?
A little what?
Outgunned.
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, I'm really proud because of our efforts this year. Just 2 days ago, and this is true, Mayor Thomas M. Menino, his honor in Boston, has declared this month, January 2009, Edgar Allan Poe Appreciation Month in the city. He's decided to rename the intersection of Boylston Street and South Charles Street, which is about two blocks from where the event we're celebrating takes place, Edgar Allan Poe Square.
Unbelievable.
They're going to be installing public art. And I just wanted to say to you all that, you know, we're hearing this stuff about how Baltimore honors Poe and Philadelphia honors Poe. This is the old story, okay? Boston is starting a new tradition. We need to do much more. We can do better. You know, if when we come to the end of this, you all decide you want to vote for the same old, you do that. If you're looking for change that we need, if you're looking for change we can believe in, if you want change, if you've had enough of what these two guys have been saying since kindergarten, if you want change and you want to encourage Boston in its march towards honoring Edgar Allan Poe and properly memorializing our relationship to him, then you have only one choice in this debate. The choice for change, Boston.
And I think it's commendable because you started with a plaque, you moved on to an intersection. In another 200 years, look for Poeville.
Thank you, Grover, a very objective summary of my argument.
Jeff, do my very best.
Can I say something here about...
Not really, Jeff.
Stop it.
No, go ahead. Yes, absolutely. Sure.
You know, I'm really impressed that the mayor of Boston has finally come out and said something. He issued a proclamation. I mean, wow, how can we top that? The mayor of
Keep
Baltimore...
Keep your mayor out of jail.
I think... I think now, the mayor of Baltimore just had a proclamation it was not guilty, wasn't it? Is that her?
Now, I work for the city of Baltimore, and it is my firm belief that Mayor Dixon is one of the best mayors that Baltimore's ever had, and remember that you are innocent until proven guilty. That aside, it was the mayor of Baltimore a month ago who stepped forward, held a news conference, and said, "We are proud of Baltimore and its association with Poe. We are going to do everything we can to honor Poe with the 2009 celebration." Now, I took some notes prior to the sudden change in attitude of the mayor of Boston. I have some notes here of what the mayor of Richmond said about the Poe bicentennial. The mayor said nothing. The mayor of Philadelphia... Listen to this. Said nothing. The mayor of New York, listen to this. Said nothing. Finally, the mayor of Boston.
Oh, it's your proclamation. Wow, that's really great. And, oh, boy.
Are you imitating the way the mayor speaks?
And then he, you know, forgot about it. And I'm glad they are celebrating one event, because honestly, I don't think anyone would attend anything that they would be doing anyway. So I'm glad that you're just doing one event. You don't want to overwork yourself, you know, with this.
It's two events.
Two nights in a row.
Yeah. And
there you go.
In 5 minutes, it will be three events. And by the time we leave here, it will be 5 years of celebrating the bicentennial. So I congratulate the mayor of Boston for finally coming to his senses briefly to say something about Poe and Boston.
You know, Jeff, I have to say something. It's notable that you were taking notes.
Yes.
During Paul's spiel.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is the sign of a true debater. That they take the notes while the other people are talking. I think it's very good. It shows you're very astute. The last person I saw do that was John McCain.
Well, actually, I'm not taking notes. I'm just doing this because it looks like
it's actually
I'm really,
like doodles.
taking notes. Okay.
It's scribble. It just looks like I'm, you know.
Well, it was very believable.
Yeah.
And now let's go to Ed. I have a question for Ed. Ed?
Can I add one a rebuttal thing?
Yeah, sure.
To Jeff's mayor of Baltimore, who was at the press conference in October to announce the Poe bicentennial celebrations in Baltimore, comes right out and starts talking about Poe, and the first words out of her mouth almost were, Poe was born in Baltimore.
He should have been.
And
she was right. I mean, cut her some slack. She made him. She spoke for 20 minutes praising Poe. She makes one error, and you're...
Well, latest news, you know, reports on your mayor, I'm wondering, you know, what gift card she got to come to that press conference to talk about Poe.
Yeah.
But besides it's the whole attitude that, Baltimore has been talking about Poe so much that people really think that Poe is that wrapped up in that city, that he was born there, that he spent his whole life there. I've heard people interviewed and say this, people who are living in Baltimore say, oh, yeah, well, he lived here his whole life and born and died here and all that kind of stuff.
Jealous.
It's the ruse that Baltimore has passed on to the world, that Poe is all about them, and it's never been true.
Jealous.
And you're going to make me cry. It's so sad. Sorry. I'm
all right. I have a question for Ed. All right?
Anything to interrupt
Ed.
It.
And I have to be fair.
Ed,
what are you going to do
with the trophy when you win it tonight? Okay.
How can we be sure that Philly fans won't turn on Poe like they did... like they did with Santa Claus at the vet?
If Poe were a member of the Eagles or the Phillies, he may get booed sometimes. That is true. But he would still go into the Writers Hall of Fame wearing the colors of the Philadelphia team. I was hoping at some point to lead everybody in the Eagles chant, but I thought that would really be playing to the crowd too much. But I am so hoping for an Eagles-Ravens World Series Super Bowl. That would be something.
I'm glad you're not playing to the crowd, Ed. That's good.
Never do that.
That's right. Would you gentlemen like to comment on that at all?
Well, I know we can tell when the Philadelphia Eagles play because we can smell it. The stench comes all the way down to Baltimore. So when we smell that, we know that, you know.
From Baltimore, he's making that comment, you know? I've been to Baltimore.
Boy, it's a good thing, Jeff, that no one knows you're parked in the alley out back.
We'll be leaving right after the show.
It's a blue
van. Yeah.
Grover, maybe I could jump in here and offer my rebuttal.
Yes.
I don't really think that the fate of the NFL has that much to do with Edgar Allan Poe this particular year. Poe cared about one sport. It was long-distance swimming. Apparently, he was quite good at that as a teenager,
true, yeah.
And he boasted about it. But he wasn't much of a football fan. And I want to know another thing about Philadelphia. Ed's right. There was a time when Poe was happy living here. By my calculation, reading the biographies, it was about a 15-minute period during the autumn of 1841. He said, maybe I do know what I'll eat for the next 2 days. No, I'm sorry. The record of Poe's life in these cities is perfectly clear. I'll give you a representative quote. I feel more and more disgusted with my situation. Pecuniary embarrassments have already driven me nearly to distraction. I have suffered much. All of that when he was living right here in a city which, yes, was perfectly happy to take his best stories, publish them for a pittance, and chew him up and spit him out. I'm sorry, Philadelphia. I'm sure you're much more humane to your writers today and don't leave your artists starving in the gutters, but you sure did it then.
Well, I have to be honest with you, Paul. What you just described, we look at as a compliment in Philadelphia.
Sorry to hear it.
All righty. Jeff, Philadelphia has given rise to three prominent authors about Poe: Arthur Hobson Quinn, Daniel Hoffman, and Dwight Thomas.
And two of them are dead. Well, that's harsh.
It happens.
Yep.
Who does Baltimore have to boast about in terms of a writer?
H.L. Mencken, F. Scott Fitzgerald. Give me a second.
Poe authors. Poe authors.
What's that?
Authors who wrote about Poe.
John Irwin, professor of English at Hopkins. And give me a second. I think that's it.
Oh,
right. So what? Now,
Paul,
do you want me to comment on
anyone in Boston?
Well, I'm actually interested in talking about the Baltimore scene, of course. And many of you have read the Poe Shadow by Matthew Pearl, a really interesting book that takes off on Poe. But I actually wanted to say something else about Baltimore and its literary reputation. You can see why Jeff is so determined to hold on to everything to do with Poe, because as soon as he leaves Poe, it's down to H.L. Mencken. Now, Mencken really is a Baltimore writer, but by my reckoning, Mencken is the third or fourth, maybe the fifth most effective cynical satirist America has produced. You know, Mark Twain, Ambrose Bierce, and there must be three or four others. And then you get to Mencken. You can have Mencken. Okay? I think it's a big boast on the part of Baltimore that, you know, Frederick Douglass was living there at the same time that Edgar Allan Poe was living there. They might have passed in the street. How different they were. But, you know, it's kind of interesting. Frederick Douglass was a slave when he lived in Baltimore, not a writer at all. And Edgar Allan Poe was a wage slave when he lived there. So that was their common feature, you know? And as soon as Frederick Douglass could manage it, he got the hell out of Baltimore, and he moved to Massachusetts.
By the way, next year we're going to have the big H.L. Mencken agreement. Not going to have any debate about it.
Yeah, you can keep him.
Now, how about if we test some of your Poe literary knowledge? And I think to help us do this, we should have the man himself, Mr. Poe. And I think we'll go down the line here. How many times does Poe use the word bells in the first stanza of a poem which was called The Bells? Yes. How many times in the first stanza? Ed?
This is me. 12.
Okay. Jeff?
Eight.
Okay. Paul?
9.
$1.
All right. Mr. Poe, if you would recite the first stanza of your fabulous poem, The Bells, and we'll count.
My pleasure. Hear the sledges with the bells, silver bells, What a world of merriment their melody foretells. How they tinkle, tinkle, tinkle in the icy air of night, while the stars that o'ersprinkle all the heavens seem to twinkle with a crystalline delight, keeping time, time, time in a sort of runic rhyme to the tintinnabulation that so musically wells from the bells, 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 bells.
Stop!
From the jingling and the tinkling of the bells.
So I was
close. Very nice.
I was close. I said nine. I got it. Come on.
That was 10.
Yes, but I was close.
That seems to be Boston's theme tonight. I am closer. I'm getting closer. Sorry, gentlemen. It's 10. But hey, you know, at least you got close. Thank you. Thank you, sir. Yes, I do have a question.
Maybe I'll stay up here.
Okay. All right. Jeff, let's start with you.
Good.
A lot of authors sometimes become known for their idiosyncrasies. Did Mr. Poe prefer the semicolon or the dash?
I know this.
I would say semicolon.
You are so mistaken. It's the dash.
The dash. Yeah, I knew that one too.
Oh,
I did.
It looks like two dashes and a semicolon, which is help me in the Morse code. And the answer is?
I've often been called a very dashing fellow.
You got it. Thank you. How about a round of applause for help for Mr. Poe? All right. Jeff, this should be an easy one for you.
Whoa.
Yes.
What about these two guys?
Yeah, you did start with him.
Oh, okay.
Someone else.
All right. How about we go with Ed?
I don't want to show off.
All right. All right, Ed.
No one told me there was going to be a test tonight. I didn't study at all.
What was the name of the sextant who witnessed the disinterment of Mr. Poe? In 1875, was that it?
When Baltimore started to care about Poe?
Precisely.
I don't know. I'm not going to pretend that I'm thinking about it. I don't know. Was it
Should we stop for a minute? I think Jeff has to use the men's room.
Give it to him, Jeff.
George Spence.
Boy, that's really essential.
That was it. George Spence. Tip my tongue.
Barry Poe the first time and reinterred him the second time. And he committed suicide in the catacombs underneath Westminster Church.
So you see, Poe was already reinterred once. Why don't we just reinter him again, just further up the coast?
Is that the answer?
Yes.
Good, because I don't have it.
Oh.
Oh, I should have just said something.
I agree with Jeff.
And he was 5'5", too.
All right. Here's another question.
He was 5'5", too.
Let's go to Paul for this. They say that Poe modeled his raven after a famous bird.
Whose question is this? The easiest question you got. Shouldn't I be?
Oh, poor Ed. He gets asked the hard questions. Maybe you should move to Boston where you have a tough climate and we're used to being asked the hard questions.
Actually, Ed will need a GPS just to find the Poe intersection. Oh.
How many people am I debating?
Okay, there you go. We'll all need a GPS to find it. All right, what was the name of the bird and who owned it?
Okay, the name of the bird, I don't remember, but Dickens owned it, and I've seen it today. It's up in the fabulous exhibit of Poe memorabilia in the Rare Books Collection. I recommend all of you see it before you come to Boston.
All right, I don't know if that counts since you only answered half the question. Audience?
Grip.
Yes.
I knew that. Of course you did.
Everybody knows
grip,
that
I think,
Boston.
Is really what they're saying. All right, I think we are actually ready for a closing statement. We will ring the bell to officially end the questions. Well, that does have a ring to it, doesn't it? Each representative gets to make a closing statement, three closing statements, approximately 3 minutes each. And let's start with, let me see. Let's start with Paul.
Thank you very much. Thank you all for attending tonight. As I said at the beginning, my opponents have been asking the wrong questions for years. If the question is, for example, where did Poe live the longest, the answer is Richmond. If the question is what city honored Poe first and most, perhaps longest, the answer is Paris. If the question is what city did Poe live in when he suffered the most, then I think it's a toss-up between Philadelphia and Baltimore, and New York has a pony in that race, too. So the real question should be, how did Edgar Allan Poe become the Edgar Allan Poe that's worth remembering? He became it by responding to the only city's literary tradition that was 200 years old in America at the time he was writing, in the antebellum period. And that literary tradition was rich enough to represent to Poe something that he needed to rebel against. So when he wrote stories that were not didactic, but aimed at moving the reader in ways that he's still moving readers today, he was writing in an un-Boston way. And every other feature of his major identity as a critic and as a writer comes out of this kind of struggle. So he didn't want poetry to be preachy. He disagreed with all of the ways in which New England was all about reform and abolition and causes and transcendentalist religious preaching and Unitarianism. He hated all of that stuff. And that's what made him Poe. And it made New England stronger to have someone like Poe criticizing him, and it made him stronger in this struggle of opposition. So if you have a simple-minded idea of how an author's identity is shaped, oh, he lives somewhere, he wrote there, yeah, well, don't vote for Boston. But if you understand the complex dynamic that's involved, then you will vote for Boston. I'd just like to use my last 30 seconds to invite you all to join me in a group recitation of the final stanza of The Raven. And if you don't know it, you'll chime in on the last word, which you do know. It begins, "And the raven never flitting." Shall we go? "And the raven never flitting, still is sitting, still is sitting on that pallid bust of Pallas, perched above my chamber door, and his eyes have all the seeming of a demon's that is dreaming, and the lamplight o'er him streaming casts his shadow on the floor, and my soul from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor shall be lifted
nevermore."
From Boston.
Yeah.
Great hit.
You know, Paul, I got goosebumps when you did that. But then I've been getting goosebumps since early this morning.
Maybe you should see your doctor.
Okay. Second closing statement, Jeff Jerome.
Well, first of all, we all made very good points about Poe, the way he wrote. Yes, even Paul made some interesting comments about Poe. And I think we all agree that Poe was a genius. But when you look at, you have to look at the big picture. You have to look at everything. You just can't pick a segment from Poe's life and say, like Ed says, he did this in Philadelphia, but he was born in Boston, you know, whatever. I think you have to look at the big picture. And I think Baltimore stands out as the Poe city because of the way Baltimore has honored him since 1875, and the fact that, like I said, he began his literary career here, family's from Baltimore, and I should have had someone write some jokes for me, but
yes, you should have.
But I will end with Poe's own words, and these are words that you will find in a book called George Lippard, Prophet of Protest, Writings of an American Radical, on page 265, Poe says, "And now you're my last hope. Get me out of Philadelphia, for God's sake, do it."
I've seen it.
I rest my case.
The actual quote, in case you thought that was true, is, "You are my last hope. If you fail me, I can do nothing but die." See, Poe's turning to his friends in Philadelphia towards the end of his life to help him out.
Did they do it? No.
They did. They got him money, and they got him money so he could go down south to meet the girl Amira Shelton, who he became engaged to.
Actually,
unfortunately, had they not given him the money, maybe he would have stayed in Philadelphia and lived.
You know, this is what... This is one point where we agree. Poe had very good friends in Philadelphia. George Lepard, gosh, you know, if we could all have friends like that. And one of these days, probably in the spring, when I come back to Philadelphia, Ed promised to take me to his grave, and I'm putting flowers on it. This guy did a lot for Edgar Allan Poe, and
And Jeff, I promise I won't leave you there.
Yes, thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
And finally, Ed Pettit.
We don't need the literal bones of Edgar Allan Poe. We need to appropriate his legacy. For over a century, Poe has been maligned as a crazy, drug-addled drunk, his macabre tales proof of a disordered mind. But the truth is that Poe was a dedicated professional writer who created a substantial body of work that has had an enormous influence on all of literature. Poe invents the Mr. Detective story, which has burgeoned into one of the largest literary genres. He's the forefather of both the horror and science fiction genres. He was the greatest American literary critic of his time. Poe was a poet whose verse would outlast the scribblings of most of his contemporaries. And where does Poe accomplish all this? While living in Philadelphia. Philly, in its tumbling mess of democracy, strife, toil, and glory, is the kind of place where the greatest American writer needed to be to hone his vision, to perfect his craft. Poe's genius flourished here. This city in the early 1840s was the crucible for his imagination. He may have briefly lived in other cities during his life. He may have died in Baltimore again while he was on his way back to Philly. But his writing career was set afire in the flaming channel of literature known as Philadelphia Gothic that you can still see in writers today. This does not mean that Baltimore did not play a role in helping form Poe's creative genius, or Boston, in a sense, is Poe reacting against the writers there. But those things just pale in comparison to what Poe did after he left their cities. I'll shift gears and use a sports metaphor. Babe Ruth was born in Baltimore, and they even have a museum and all that, and became the greatest and most famous baseball player ever. But if you look at his plaque in the Hall of Fame, his hat says the New York Yankees. And I hate the Yankees. But but not only that, but wait a minute. Didn't Babe Ruth start his career in Boston? Wasn't he one of the greatest pitchers to ever play the game for those 4 years in Boston as a Red Sox? But he makes his greatest contributions to baseball while as a Yankee. If there were a Writers Hall of Fame, Poe would be inducted under the colors of the city where he produced his greatest works and had his greatest seasons as a writer. Baltimore, that's just Poe's minor league team. Poe was born in Boston, raised in Richmond and England. He lived and wrote in Baltimore and New York. But all of these places were just mere stops in a career which reached its creative peak during the time Poe lived in Philadelphia. Baltimore may have the body, and Boston might be the birthplace, but literary history shows that Poe is a Philadelphia writer. Poe's legacy is as a Philadelphia writer. Thank you. And since Jeff mentioned the Philadelphia writer George Lepard, who is who I love as a writer, and I read his stuff and write about him. George Lepard said in his obituary for Poe after Poe died, as an author, his name will live while three-fourths of the bastard critics and mongrel authors of the present day go down to nothingness and night. And Lepard, a Philadelphia writer, was right.
Woo! Well, to be totally fair to Paul, they are putting a Babe Ruth intersection in Boston.
You can have Babe Ruth. We want Poe.
All right. This is the moment we've all sort of been waiting for. And we are going to see which one of these distinguished debaters takes the prize, so to speak. Now, to help me out, I would like, number one, Mr. Poe to come up here. And two members of the audience. I need some people. How about this young lady? Oh, that's your wife, Ed.
and my daughter.
How about this
and
young lady right here? Come
everyone.
On up. Come on up. And who else? All right, come on up. There he goes. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to. Hi. Yes. Yeah.
I brought a Bostonian.
You brought a Bostonian?
No.
Oh, really?
Yes. And,
wow.
You're going to relay that?
He definitely acknowledges this city for Poe.
Oh, this is cheating.
And Leonard Nimoy does speak for everyone, let's face it.
I win.
Could we beam
Spock.
Her down
I win
or something?
Right now, right? With Spock, that's yeah. The authority.
Beam her down.
Philadelphia, mm-hmm. Both recited the together.
Really?
And
wow.
He recited many Poe works in Poe.
Very nice. What's your name?
Alice Evelyn.
Alice, and where are you from? Okay. Very nice. And who do we have here?
Don Carter.
Hi, Don. Where are you from?
Germantown.
Germantown. Very good. So we have a completely unbiased group of judges.
Now, I did spend many years in Texas where...
Well, that's close to Boston. Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, we have the right people here, I'm sure of it. All right. Without any further ado... I'm going to ask, I'm going to name a city, and I want you to applaud for the one you think best represents the legacy of Edgar Allan Poe. You've heard all of the arguments, all of the statements, and this is the moment of truth, okay? First, how about Boston? Yeah.
That's way more respectable than I thought it was going to be.
Wow. That's rather impressive. Yeah. All right. How about Baltimore?
Not a bribe. That was not bribery.
They're not bribes. They're
no,
earmarks.
No.
Okay. Alaska. Yes, I am. Yeah. And now, Philadelphia.
Grover, I'm not sure I heard that. Could you do that again?
I didn't hear that.
Could we try that again? Now, I mean, really let us know how you feel. Okay. I was taken aback, to be honest with you. I didn't expect that. So, let's have a huddle. All right. Oh, it's gonna be amazing. Okay, that's good.
Who would ever thought?
What's that? That's right. Yeah. How about that? It's a unanimous decision. It looks like, with deepest regards and much respect for the
right.
the runners up.
Yeah. Oh, sincerity. Oh, man. This was rigged from the beginning, and you know it. We never had a chance.
Now, Jeff, if he had argued like that during the debate, you might have gotten it. People in Philly like rough and tumble. Ladies and gentlemen, it looks like Philadelphia carries the day. And how about a round of applause for our audience members who participated as judges?
Thank you very much.
Yep, I think we all did.
Wait, there's actually more.
Hold on, everyone. We do have a brief speech by the winner. Ladies and gentlemen, just before you leave, this is the coup de grace. Please welcome Ed Pettit, the winner.
First of all, I want to thank God. And but mainly I want to thank my wife who made that great robe for me. And I sincerely want to thank Grover for moderating and the library for having this event and everybody at the library who worked on putting this together. And I especially want to thank Jeff, Jerome, and Paul Lewis. And
now you clap. Now you clap.
Where were you when we needed you?
Yeah, we needed you a few minutes ago.
And it's great doing these events and getting to go out and talk about Edgar Allan Poe and spread the word and get people to read him and all that kind of stuff. And I also want to encourage you to go to other bicentennial events that are happening in this city and in their cities, and they can each tell you, you know, very quickly an event happened in their cities, because I know the library has to get everybody out of here. But this Thursday night at the Kelly Writer House at University of Pennsylvania is a murder of ravens. There is the official Friends of Poe bicentennial birthday party this Friday at 5:30 at the German Society, which is right across the street from the Poe House, and I'm in this little skit with Edgar Allan Poe and other park rangers, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And then on Friday night, Grover is going to be at the Mutter Museum from 7 to 9, doing a thing on the medicine of Poe with a UPenn hospital internist. On Saturday at the Poe House is the big grand opening of the new exhibits at the Poe House in Philadelphia, and Daniel Hoffman, the great Daniel Hoffman, is going to give a talk at 2 o'clock. And in February, which isn't too far off, at the Poe House, there's going to be celebration of a new book of tales came out called Poe, 19 New Tales Inspired by Edgar Allan Poe, edited by Ellen Datlow, and I'll be hosting that event on February 21st. Most of this stuff you can find on flyers, which are right outside the door on that table. Jeff, is there other events in Baltimore you would tell them about real quickly?
Well, some of you were talking about the Poe birthday celebration this weekend in Baltimore. It is sold out. But we do have another weekend at the end of the month, January 31st and February 1st. We have John Aston, who will be doing a special tribute to Poe. and we're having theatrical presentations of The Telltale Heart, Some Words with a Mummy, and Hop Frog. And if you would like to visit our website, it's PoeBicentennial.com, and maybe we'll see you in Baltimore. And I had a blast here. Thank you for your hospitality. But I hate to end on a serious note, but Ed, I have something for you. Do you know what it means to be served?
I'm not sure.
Well, you've been served with a summons to appear in Baltimore at the Baltimore Courthouse to answer charges of libel and slander.
And so I have.
Against the city of Baltimore, and Mayor Dixon will be waiting for you.
Awesome gift cards to bribe her away.
Yeah, right. Thank you. Thank you.
Paul, what do you have going this week?
Okay, yeah, well, very briefly, this week on Thursday, we're having a 200th birthday party for Edgar Allan Poe in Boston. I'll tell you, we are going to have an event at the intersection. I'll get to that right at my closing. Thank you so much. Matthew Pearl will be speaking. Professor Scott Peoples from the College of Charleston, settle down. And we'll have a birthday cake to feed 100 people, appropriately decorated. On Friday, we're showing the new Poe bioflick, Last Days of the Raven, and having a question and answer session with its producer and star, Brent Fidler. On Saturday, we'll all be meeting at the new Poe Square to inter someone alive. Bring your own trowel. I have cards about the event. If any of you think you might make the trip to Boston, and if you don't, shame on you.
Paul Lewis. I'll be there, Paul. I'm going to go up. I'm going to Boston on Thursday night, so if anybody needs a ride, just give me a call, and I'll be at Baltimore on Saturday.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Grover Silcox, everybody, please give me a big round of applause.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.